A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Things that I talk about are for everyone. It's not just for non-binary people. It can really help anyone of any gender realize, free yourselves from those norms of gender. Cis women have fought that for a very long time, but there is a way to be a woman. You have to have a child, that you have to be hairless, you have to be all these kinds of things. And kind of like within my advocacy of being non-binary, I want to show people that if they don't think of gender in such a binary way generally, that they can free themselves from that as well.
Welcome to Honesty Box, where we find the answers to the questions you thought were off limits. Hello, I'm Alex Beard, and welcome back to Honesty Box at the Balance Club, where we ask the questions that you want the answers to, no judgment, and no topic is off limits. As always, if you'd like to submit your own question for this series, you can do so anonymously and super easily at www.thebalance.club. Just click on the podcast option and a question box will pop up for you. The question that's been submitted this week is, as more people are identifying as non-binary and transgender, do you think gender should still be listed on identification? This question really got me thinking. How often are we asked our gender when filling out paperwork? Only last week I was asked on a form for a store loyalty card, but why do they need to know? For so many of us, myself included, we wouldn't think twice about answering that. But for those people who don't identify as just male or female, these questions can be hugely problematic. To discuss this whole topic further, I'm thrilled to say I'm joined by Rudam Ridwan. Rudam is a queer, non-binary, multidisciplinary artist from Indonesian origins. Rudam's work centres on the empowerment of queer, trans, intersex people of colour and has been published internationally with features in Vice, Galden, Gay Times and King Kong magazine. They are a self-described work in progress that will never quite be finished, and that's okay. You can read their stories at Rudam Ridwan on social media. So the question we're pulling out today is, as more people are identifying as non-binary, transgender, etc., do you think gender should still be listed on identification?
Yeah, it's a really great question and kind of a hot topic at the moment. It's a very complicated issue that unfortunately doesn't have a clear-cut answer. There are many kind of perspectives on the issues because of the different priorities of members across the trans and non-binary communities, depending on a number of intersecting factors. It's not just, you can't just have one voice for and like a lot of different people with intersectionalities. So I can only speak as to what I view as the priorities as a trans and non-binary person of colour in the UK. So just prefacing that with kind of my perspective here. I think it's kind of like the discussion here for non-binary people is really whether we wish to have institutionalized recognition and identification of non-binary as a category, or whether we want to reform how gender is recognized by the state itself. To which there are arguments for both sides. I guess like one of the asks from trans groups around the Gender Recognition Act reform, I'm not sure if you know what the Gender Recognition Act is, but for anyone kind of listening, it's an act which enables trans people to have their gender recognized in law and reflected on their birth certificate. So one of the issues that what the ask from trans groups is to for the legal recognition of non-binary people within this act. At the moment, non-binary as a gender isn't legally recognised and not an option in most public records, including identification such as on passports. So this obviously negatively impacts a lot of non-binary people as they find it difficult to access services, including life-saving transition-related healthcare because of the kind of stuffy bureaucracy of gender itself in these institutions. So I guess the potential positive side of this legal recognition, as well as the kind of gender on IDs, is that theoretically we will be able to gain access to these services more easily, and being non-binary would become a more kind of recognized identity, which would theoretically, I'm doing air quotes here, lead to better systemic treatment of us.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it, like you say, it's sort of either we do away with this whole kind of fascination and fixation on gender, or we recognize the amazing spectrum of gender that there is. And is it simply a case of having all genders represented in a tick box? Because like you say, at the moment it's still very binary. So whilst there is movement in allowing people to recognize their gender if it wasn't the one that they were assigned at birth, it's still either male or female.
Exactly. So the other side of the argument is kind of that, is this another case of visibility without protection? We can't say that we live in a world which is not transphobic. We live in a society structured around racism and transphobia. And if like non-binary or X was added onto IDs, or indeed, like, not that anyone's asking for this, but if there was something that said trans man or trans woman, it would potentially create safety issues at many of the places where that ID is required. We kind of can't do a universal idea of this, because different institutions in different countries might create issues for this kind of things. Additionally, kind of having a list of all non-binary people could potentially be used to attack us in the case of a kind of fascist government in the future. It kind of feels strange to be on a list somewhere that can be accessible with all of our kind of data in this way. And it still is a bit unsafe for us. In the ideal world, there'd be no transphobia and it wouldn't be such a heightened issue. But in this case, there are negatives to being legally recognised in institutions in this way as well. So it becomes a bit complicated.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I had a quick research into how other countries are sort of dealing with this. And I'm not saying this is an exhaustive list, but certainly all I could find at the moment was the Dutch government is phasing out gender markers on national identification documents. And France no longer have it on their driving licenses. So it's interesting, there is some movement towards, I mean, only small, agreed, only two countries, but there is some movement towards having that box removed entirely from identification for some documentation.
Yeah, I think it's a good step. I think this would be my personal opinion, but I think that the biggest question here is, why should gender take such precedence in our relationships with these authorities? So just thinking about scenarios that you mentioned there, where instant identification is crucial, such as telling someone's age or the difference between two people named John Smith, does the M, F or an X, if they add that, really make differentiate between people for authorities? I would argue that no. And then we should be kind of, before we institutionalize but non-binary as a gender or this extra gendered categories, we should kind of question the bureaucratic institutions such as HMRC and the transport police and kind of work to remove gender as a listed measure of identity in the places where it is a meaningless categorization. I don't believe that it should be that non-binary is a third gender. And for me, being non-binary is as much about a recognition that the gender binary itself is an inadequate and kind of oppressive structure that is a mistake to further entrench into our public life in this way. So I do think that removing gender from any identification where it's, what would be the point of it there? Why does it need to be there? We should be removing it.
I mean, in the past, we've removed race, we've removed religion, we've removed marital status. And like you say, the point of documentation is to prove who people say they are. And, you know, how do any of those things, gender included, help to clarify that?
Exactly. And I think that, yeah, the more I think the question was phrased, the more trans and non-binary people that are identifying it as such that come out, it kind of just puts that question to these people of like, why does it need to be there? And especially there's a new kind of movement within these spaces that is like, there's no way to look any gender. So that's kind of one of the main messages that I try and push in my kind of discussions is that there's no way to look male, female, non-binary, anything. So how can we use gender as an identification tool, because there's no way to look any of those things?
I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about the roles, you know, the importance in which categorizing a gender, where is that important? And the only scenario, and I know this is a strange scenario, but it's the one that I keep rounding back to, is when police are searching for somebody, for, you know, I don't know, let's in this example say, you know, a person, a wanted person, and they don't know their name, they don't know much about them, they just know a description. And it's always, you know, a male or a female or, you know, 6 foot male. And I always think, how, in that circumstance, I can't get my head around how that's always going to be important. That's always going to be an identifier, but it's also not who they are. And I guess it's that distinction, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that this kind of also tends to, if you think about it, how is that really narrowing it down to who the person is specifically? That's why they have the kind of specific characteristics of what they look like from the victim or someone who the witness that gets a kind of look as to what height they are, what they're wearing, all those characteristics that aren't specific to gender. And I find that, like, if we, for example, when we talk about the ethnicity in those kind of descriptions, it can lead to a lot of like racism within these industries. And that's why we're kind of moving away from that and providing more kind of specific descriptions as opposed to generalizations of those categories. And I think that's what we should do with gender as well. I don't think having that really narrows it down enough to warrant that use.
And just going back a little bit, and I know you were talking about the Act, and obviously this month the UK government dropped the price of legally changing your registered gender from £140 to £5. Obviously there's still obstacles in the way there, that is just a headline. But it seems these steps, albeit small and, you know, slow steps for trans people to identify themselves correctly, are being made. But these same steps really aren't happening for non-binary folk. It seems the steps forward are, the non-binary community are just behind the trans community in terms of that kind of legal representation and acknowledgement. Is that fair?
I think generally I don't think we're moving fast enough for trans people generally, just to preface that. And I think that them reducing the price is kind of just a way to kind of push us back a little bit instead of creating actual real meaningful change, because it's still so much bureaucracy to actually change your gender. But definitely there's different obstacles and for non-binary people. I think that ultimately I want to expose the ridiculousness of gender, but people aren't, the institutions kind of need those categories to kind of to move forward in kind of data research and all that kind of stuff that they want to do, and like, so it does kind of stop access to a lot of these services for non-binary people. If they want to be non-binary and be recognized, they there's a lot more stop points where people will be like, no, you can't be that way. And so, like, personally, I don't admit that I am non-binary to any of these institutions, because it will just mean that they will push me back. The kind of medical understanding of being trans and accessing this healthcare, you have to kind of live as the opposite gender than you were assigned for a certain amount of time to do it, and there's no space for being non-binary within that. So you can't actually access this care, life-saving medical care, unless you kind of lie your way through it.
Strangely, that was going to be my next question, which is for yourself, and if I hope you don't mind me asking this, what's the impact on you on having to fill out official documentation where the only options for you to tick are male or female?
Yeah, it just kind of repeats that people like me are not accepted within the current system. We aren't kind of safe within these spaces because we're not recognized as legitimate people within here. So it does have a kind of personal impact in terms of how I feel when this happens. It is very tiresome to kind of have to go into the world every day and kind of be on the defensive and always have to reassure people of pronouns and explain what non-binary is all the time and do this constant work. And then it's also within these institutions, you either have to lie, which creates a big personal toll on me, because you realize that it's that you aren't accepted, or you won't be able to access this care. And so I made that decision to lie on these documents when I've had to deal with them, which I thought was the better option, but it also does kind of take a lot of the happiness out of these things as well.
Yeah, of course. And going back to you saying, you know, every day going out into the world and having to defend who you are and that the toll that must take, are you finding that, I mean, maybe I'm being naive, I mean, I'm sure I am, are you finding that is happening less and less, that you're having to defend yourself, or more and more?
I think we're in a, particularly in the UK, there is a very heightened awareness of trans and non-binary people at the moment, which is a good thing in certain aspects, that we are having these conversations. We weren't having these conversations widely in the public 5 to 10 years ago. But the conversation is being led by cis people. So all of the media that comes out around trans people or trans issues, again, air quotes here, is where they're framing trans people as an issue to kind of be like, well, why are they complaining and what are they doing, as opposed to issues that are facing us, violence, inability to access healthcare, inability to kind of go into bathrooms and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's the framework of it is unhelpful, and therefore I think it has, because it's come into the public in such a way, it has actually potentially set us back quite a bit, because the we are getting that visibility without the protection of it. So we are having to go into that world and put all that effort into it ourselves without getting any of the payoff at this time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I can see that. And I mean, I am highly aware that here I am as a cis woman speaking to you about this. And I guess my question is for the people who are listening to this, and some people might not have
entered into that space or really started their learning about these communities, what would you say to them who, you know, how to help be part of the solution and not part of that problem?
Yeah, I think like hopefully a lot of people are, and they are usually very limited, but there is a lot of talk about allyship and how you can do that appropriately at the moment, which I think is obviously a really great conversation. And I think that the top of those lists is like do the groundwork yourself. Obviously you came into this conversation and you probably did some research and have been looking up what's happening in the world around this. If you don't have that kind of background knowledge and you go into these conversations, then you're just going to kind of ask to put the effort on that person who is obviously having to do this every day anyway. So doing that research and kind of figuring out what you're in it for. Like a lot of allies kind of come in and they're in it for personal gain in some way, or there's a lot of brands that will want to work with me, and they're doing it in a kind of marketing way because they see it as a big topic at the moment where they can get views and clicks. And if you're doing it for that reason, I don't think it's very helpful to ask a demand of the information from these people who are struggling. And then just listening, just doing a lot of listening and talking about these issues with your family and continuing to be active. Like there's social media is a minefield sometimes, but I've found it really helpful to follow really different people and different perspectives on Instagram and Twitter. And even if I'm not weighing into those conversations, I'm just kind of observing and finding out what really is affecting those people who are most marginalized, and working on talking to relatives about that, talking to my workplace, talking to my government officials, and just really being active there. And it can't be underestimated. Like people say, oh, I don't have a large following on anything. What can I really be doing? And I think it's those kind of middle people who don't necessarily have a really big opinion either way, but just kind of like bring in that awareness and that knowledge to lots of people are really helpful. Because I mean, I can only influence probably people who are willing to listen to me, which is becoming less and less, I guess, as I become more outspoken on certain issues. So those people that think they can't make a difference really are the ones that can be putting uplifting and boosting those voices of people that aren't heard in those spaces. An example of I've seen a workplace and they kind of had their allyship kind of training, but in the examples they kind of use, they use like unnecessarily like gendered language, and I just send an email to them saying, have you thought about maybe just using like they or gender neutral pronouns, or because we don't necessarily need to know the gender of that person in that scenario. And they're like, oh, that's a great idea, and like no one in the 10 years of us doing it has ever brought that up. And I just find it very hard to believe that no one noticed it. So you just kind of, there must be a bit of bystander effect, I guess, that people like know it, but to feel like someone else is going to do it, or that they are needed in that equation. And I think it's just very important to say something and then see where it goes.
It's quite interesting that whenever I have spoken about trans rights or, you know, the community in as a large on my platform, I have never received the kickback as much as I do when I speak about those issues. And obviously, I'm massively privileged, and as much as I can step away, it's not my lived experience day in, day out. And I naively was utterly horrified by that, and I know that that is the lived experience for so many people. But what do you do when people say, you know, the inevitable cries of it's political correctness gone mad? So it's not directly hateful, it just uses that very cloaked phrase of it's political correctness gone mad to dismiss.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there are people who are feeling threatened by their threatened that their way of life is going to change. And I used to kind of coddle them and be like, well, like, no, it's not you changing. It's just kind of us getting boosted. But unfortunately, it does mean that their worldview has to change. If you believe that the lives of trans people is just political correctness, then something has to change there, because you're just viewing, you're like, well, I can make jokes about this because it doesn't have a real impact on anyone. And then when you're told that actually that does have a real impact, because trans people are not able to access medical care, which is life-saving, that is when you know that it actually becomes violent. If they know that those words that they're using are leading to these situations and then they choose to do nothing, that becomes violent, and I am no longer interested in talking to them in a conversation because I have a life to lead. So I think that I try and get to the crux of what they believe, and often it just comes from ignorance. Before I knew about non-binariness or transness, I was ignorant as well, and I probably said some awful things growing up, and a lot of us do. And I think a lot of people are worried that that is going to come to life and they're going to be cancelled or removed from their jobs and all that kind of stuff. And that is just such a rare situation. And now is the time to reflect on that and think about things you've said in the past and try and come to a more knowledgeable perspective on those issues, because then it doesn't become an issue.
Mm. I think that, like so many things, so many conversations happening at the moment, which I think and hope are positive, is that it's the fear of cancel, isn't it? It's that in no other realm of people's lives, if you were learning something, let's take a new language, if you're learning French, and you pronounce something wrong or you say something wrong, would you be cancelled for it? You know, you get given the correction, you go, okay, yep, that's how I'll say it from now on. And I think people have got to become comfortable with getting things wrong, because if you're learning something and you're going about your life trying to better your understanding of something, you're going to make mistakes. I've made mistakes. And I think you have to be able to go, shit, yeah, I made a mistake there. What's the correct thing to do? Okay, move on. But there is this kind of frenzied feeling, especially on social media, that if you get something wrong, everyone's going to round on you and you're done.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there's kind of two thoughts here. I think that there should be space to make mistakes. It obviously depends on what the mistake is and the severity of the mistakes. There should be, I would like to live in a world where you can make mistakes, because otherwise people just kind of retaliate because of this kind of frenzy that happens. But also kind of getting these people to realize that that marginalized people, trans people, Black people, they haven't had that space to make mistakes throughout their lives and intergenerationally for hundreds of years. They have been in a position where they've had to prevent to not be themselves, or to kind of change themselves to be a different person, because if they make a mistake, that's their death. Going to the issues of Black Lives Matter, that's really made really obvious there at the moment in those discussions. They can't make those mistakes, whereas cis white people can more have been able to make those mistakes throughout history, and now they're just being held accountable for the things that they're saying, that they have said, that may have enabled those other things to happen. So I would kind of ask them to think about how there's a difference in who can make a mistake historically.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. I just wonder if we should take this opportunity to, if you want to, what is the biggest misconception that you come up against of non-binary people?
Oh, lots of them. I guess the one that I like to talk about is that is that there is any kind of way to look non-binary. I guess this has a impact in a lot of the spaces I operate in. I think that that is the message that I kind of want to help everyone else with as well. I think, like I think I mentioned before, like being non-binary to me is kind of exposing the ridiculousness of the way that we think about gender itself, and that misconception that there is a non-binary is kind of just like between male or female, or that it's trying to become like a third gender, is really misrepresenting what I mean. I can't speak for all non-binary people, obviously, but that's my kind of perception of what it is. Kind of saying, well, the things that I talk about are for everyone. It's not just for non-binary people. It can really help anyone of any gender realize that there is to free yourselves from those norms of gender. I know like cis women have fought that for a very long time of that there is a way to be a woman, that you have to have a child, that you have to be hairless, you have to be all these kinds of things. And kind of like within my advocacy of being non-binary, I want to show people that if they don't think of gender in such a binary way generally, that they can free themselves from that as well.
And last question, what would you like the future of gender identity to be? Or what do you think the future of gender identity is going to be?
That's a big question. I think it's very hard, and I think my understanding of it develops every day as I learn what is most crucial for the world and for people, but I see it I see gender as becoming less and less important as we kind of recognize how meaningless it is. So I think first comes this kind of recognition of marginalized identities. We kind of recognize that trans people are valid and they exist. We recognize that all gender identities and expressions are valid and should receive human rights. And then we work to develop a better understanding of genders outside of male and female, because they have historically exist and they exist now, while simultaneously recognizing that giving gender such prominence only serves to reproduce the harmful binaries themselves. So we said, like, it's great that we're talking about pronouns, it's great that we're talking about these things, but also eventually when you recognize that that doesn't actually, gender norms don't really mean anything, then I think we then go back a step and realize that gender is less important than we give it power over us.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Radam. That was really informative and very eye-opening. Thank you for being so honest and open. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.